Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
I'm John Steinbacher.
And hey, we got someone extra in here this week.
Is this where I say I'm Travis Tate?
It is.
Because Brian opened so mellow, like, yeah. Hey there. So I figure, like, if we, right. That's why I was
it's
pumping
sort of
it up with enthusiasm. So
surprising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Travis is here. He's going to talk some NBA with us. We'll be talking a little bit about, I guess, the NBA and NFL and some differences between the two leagues, especially when it comes to the election of Donald Trump. I'm sure that a lot of folks have noticed the conversation among in the two leagues a little bit different after the presidential election. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll also talk a little bit about marijuana. Should it be a legal painkiller for pro athletes? We'll discuss that coming up. It's my turn for the rivalry this week. I think I've got a good one from the National Football League for everyone to enjoy. And then we'll have our status update at the end of the show. What has caught our eye on social media here over the last couple of weeks? So that's all coming up here on this edition of The Bandwagon. Well, Travis, let's go ahead and get started. I think everyone kind of noticed the differences in the two leagues, the NBA and the NFL, when it came to kind of talking about the presidential election. And I think the biggest difference is that people in the NBA, coaches in particular, feel a little more comfortable just discussing things about the election, whereas I don't think anybody in the NFL really wanted to talk about it much.
Yeah, I think a good example to kind of back up your thought there is Bill Belichick, the coach of the New England Patriots. He's won however many Super Bowls. He's basically already a legend. Offered up some quick thoughts on this handwritten note that he sent to Trump, which I guess he sent him before the election, I think.
Yeah.
And then Trump revealed that he had gotten this letter, I believe, after the election. And so Belichick was asked about this letter, and he offered a few thoughts, basically didn't say anything. And then after that original question, the only answer he'd give was a one-word answer, which was Seattle, because that was their next opponent. So they'd say, well, what did – you know, do you condone any of the things that Trump said? And he would say, Seattle, Seattle. Ask him something else about Trump, Seattle.
That is such a Belichick answer.
That's so him.
It is very him to do that. Meanwhile, kind of on the other side, another guy who's – similarly known for his gruffness, I'd call it, Greg Popovich, came out and was much more, I guess, thoughtful and very anti-Trump, obviously, but sort of gave his own players maybe some respect through saying all that kind of stuff so that maybe they didn't have to.
Just a quick note before you go any farther, for those who might not know, Greg Popovich is the coach of the San Antonio Spurs, has been for a long time.
And what he did was this – are you talking about the press – at the press conference? Like the speech, I guess, that he gave at the press conference that – yeah.
He's one of maybe about
– we'll have a link to it.
Three – yeah. He's one of about maybe three or four NBA coaches who really came out strongly opposed to Trump being elected. He was actually sort of on the – I guess in the second wave of guys, of coaches coming out and talking about this. The first guy was Stan Van Gundy, who's the coach of the Detroit Pistons. He's also their GM, and he's been in the NBA for 20 years or more probably. Yeah. And he came out and was kind of the very first guy to say really how like disgusted he was with the rhetoric that was used by Trump, and was just very, very anti-Trump. And then others like Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich kind of fell in line after that.
Yeah. So, yeah, kind of an interesting discussion there for
right.
sure.
So I think the big question here is why is there such a huge difference between the NBA and the NFL coaches in terms of how they're talking about it?
Yeah. So my theory is that the sport itself kind of lends itself to being – to the NBA becoming a little bit more liberal and the NFL becoming more conservative. So I think you'd see that represented in the fan bases. I don't know how I could find those numbers anywhere, but I'm sure that somebody has done studies and found that NFL fans might lean a little bit more conservative than NBA fans. In part, that's because of some of the demographics. But then again, the NFL is also heavily African-American, just as the NBA is. And the NBA is also kind of like this international sport, which is another sort of side to liberalism. But the actual game itself of basketball, I mean, this is like such a very simple idea, I guess, but it's much more of a team game. There's a little more cohesion. Mm-hmm. You play offense and defense. It's a sort of a flowing game. It's closer to soccer than anything else. Meanwhile, the NFL really separates things. It's very militaristic in the way it's run. The coaches and players always use that terminology whenever they talk about going to war or going to battle, or, you know, the way that the offensive line battles the defensive line.
Well, even marching down the field.
Sure, exactly.
To score, you know. Yeah,
yep.
So.
And so I just think the game itself, and also in the NFL, there's sort of that separation of labor, so that a kick returner is only a kick returner, and a punter is only a punter, and a left tackle is going to be doing, you know, a very simple task over and over and over again.
So specialization.
Specialization. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that leads to a priority on management, which in this case I would call the coaches. And so the coaches are always very militaristic, again, in the way that they kind of discuss things and the way that they separate their troops, and they want certain guys to do certain things and keep their heads down and not do anything else other than that.
Yeah, interesting. And I think you can also look at maybe kind of the way the league runs its business as well. The NFL, you know, has all these tight rules on clothing and celebrations and everything else, whereas in the NBA, guys can at least be a little bit more free to express themselves through those methods. So, yeah, I think the leagues themselves are kind of that way as well.
Even the NBA, under the former commissioner David Stern, when they brought in a the clothing sort of rules that they have to wear nice clothes basically when they come into the arena and leave the arena, that has sort of shifted and changed into making all of the NBA players like now fashionistas essentially. Russell Westbrook and James Harden and all these other guys kind of wear like crazy, yet I would say artistic clothing as they come in the arena.
And Cam Newton in the NFL got suspended for the first series for not wearing a tie. To ride an airplane. And he looked really nice. He had a nice black turtleneck.
Yeah, nice hat, right?
Yeah, what's wrong with turtlenecks?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not a frequent tie.
You can't wear a tie with a turtleneck.
As a frequent wearer.
You will,
but
or you'll
Carl
get
Sagan
fined or suspended,
wore turtlenecks, you guys. Yeah. Like, awesome astrophysicists wore lots of black turtlenecks.
True.
And beatniks. True. I guess that might be part of the problem.
Right, yeah.
I have one other question. Just so looking toward the future as we start to ease into this idea of a Trump administration. What do you think the future holds for NFL, NBA? I read somewhere on social media in the immediate post-election period about how someone said now the NFL's ratings will go up because we've got a Republican president who's just kind of a go-getter and no more of this like passive blah, blah, whatever, you know. So, I mean, do you think ratings will go up for the NFL? I had no idea that they were down really until that point. Will fewer people watch basketball, do you think, because of the coaches' political leanings? I mean, so looking ahead, how will this administration change anything, if at all?
Those are really interesting thoughts about the ratings. I don't know if I could predict either way which way the ratings will go in future years, or and if those ratings increases or decreases would be due to Trump. I just don't know that right now. The one thing I would say is that I guess it's going to be interesting. I don't think that this is going to happen, but it would be interesting if, say, the Detroit Pistons, coached by Stan Van Gundy, somehow win the NBA title and then they're asked to go to the White House.
Or Popovich. Or Steve Kerr, for that matter.
Right. They're a little more likely.
Yeah.
Right. Or even like LeBron. He openly campaigned for Hillary. So if the Cleveland Cavaliers win the title, are they going to go to the White House next year and visit with Trump? I think, honestly, that they will, but it's definitely an open question.
But didn't you just sent us a link about LeBron not staying in a Trump hotel.
True.
Like, you know, so
I said that.
That was John.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just saw it. Sorry, not you. Not you, Travis.
I didn't read it. It's a good link.
Well, so, and then my other question, you know, like pro football, because of where many of the games are played in these open air stadiums, and we have a lot of military flyovers and a lot of military sort of stuff happening, you know, before games or at half times or whatever. And so I wonder if we're going to see an uptick in that as well, even more for football, if it's going to continue to lend itself to that sort of activity. You can't really do that in basketball. You can't really have like a squadron. You could. No one would see it. Right.
I mean, you can have like fireworks and, you know, the Assembly Hall, State Farm Center. They now light the whole place up.
Sure.
Red, white, and blue at the beginning of games. It looks pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I think you can do a lot with a giant flag that covers the...
Oh, totally.
They still do stuff, but I get what you're saying about the NFL. And they recently did come into some hot water, sort of, because they were essentially paying the different arms of the military in order to have these military appreciation games in past years. And I guess they got rid of that. So there's no like money aspect to it. So it was sort of like a false thing that they were doing earlier.
Yeah, it was kind of it was like almost faux patriotism because there was money changing hands to make it happen.
Exactly.
And like hockey, once again, being left out in the cold. What's going to happen with hockey, you guys?
They need a Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup. Am I right?
Yeah.
How long has it been?
That would help. It's been a long time. Maybe Montreal in the early 90s, something like that.
That's not good enough. Come on. Come on, Canada.
I think just to add on, like, I think we should point out that obviously we're painting in very broad strokes for this conversation, but there have been several NFL players who have come out publicly against Trump. There's been several NBA players who have been come out publicly for Trump. Certainly, Colin Kaepernick has been doing a lot in the NFL, and people were actually, I think, blaming the NFL's ratings on the fact that they were showing him sitting during the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think I just wanted to point that out there because I think that's a great discussion, and I'm actually really, really interested in the demographics of both sports. But I think it's fair to point out that, you know, certainly in the NBA there has been a lot of pro-Trump sentiment, and in the NFL there's been a lot of anti-Trump sentiment. And, of course, we didn't even talk about baseball.
Right.
Where they...
Well, we can.
Well, no, I'm just saying during the game, during the playoffs, before every game, they'd have that giant flag out there.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Yeah.
I guess I didn't really read a lot about baseball. I know Jake Arrieta on the Cubs had a tweet that was interpreted. It was just basically about people in L.A., but very easy to interpret as a pro-Trump tweet.
Yeah, yeah. So interesting stuff there with the NBA and NFL kind of in the new Trump universe here.
Yeah, I guess one last thing that I just am pondering is what does that mean for team dynamics, like interplayer dynamics?
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, if you've got really strong feelings either way.
If it's anything like my Facebook page, it
could
be trouble.
Oh, my gosh. Tell me about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually did read recently that – so one of the kind of well-known NBA conservatives, because there are very few of them, is Spencer Hawes. He's a forward center, plays for Charlotte, I believe. Yeah, big guy. Played at University of Washington in Seattle. I think he's from Seattle originally, so it's kind of interesting that he would be a conservative coming from a place like Seattle. But it sounds like there, in that case, you know, everybody around the league kind of – it's sort of one of the things that he's known for, and so I don't think that any of his teammates would be pushing back against him or pushing too hard on him for bringing out his true thoughts. But then again, I'm not in that – mm-hmm. In those meetings or anything, or on the team bus.
I'm sure these dynamics are always happening, especially, you know, where you get, let's be honest, in a lot of pro sports teams, you get people from the inner cities who are, and oftentimes African-American, mixed with people who are from rural America who maybe are more conservative. So especially, I would say, probably like the NFL, which I guess is a really interesting dichotomy and sort of representative of what's going on in the country. But, you know, they kind of have to deal with each other all the time. Maybe it should be used as a model for the rest of
us. I was going to say that's. Yeah. I think we should look at this concept of teamwork. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. But yeah, it interests me, especially when we start talking about things like going to the White House or staying in hotels, or, you know, if you have somebody on a team who feels really strongly about something and takes themselves away from other team activities, or Kaepernick could even be seen as that. I'm always interested in team dynamics anyway, just in the workplace or at home or whatever. So that's something to ponder.
Yeah.
We welcome people to weigh in on Twitter about this stuff with us as we uncover more resources and think about it some more.
Absolutely. At Bandwagon Podcast, no vowels.
I know.
All right. So awesome. Good stuff, Travis. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us.
Thank you,
this week.
Travis. You want to hang out for a little bit?
Yeah, I guess I'll stick around here. What are you guys doing? Hanging out? Recording a podcast?
Yeah.
Did you say podcast?
Hey.
Whoa.
I'm pretty good at that. Yeah, so I also – and this is actually kind of related to this conversation about the NBA and the NFL because very recently Steve Kerr, who is the – what do they call it in basketball? General manager? Coach?
He's coach.
Guy?
Head
main
coach.
Dude? And former Bulls player, of course, has come out very recently in favor of allowing the use of marijuana as a painkiller for professional athletes because for many reasons, but of course, all of the controversy surrounding opioids and opioid addiction and what it can do to you, it's not good for your body anyway. And then being super addicted to it obviously is not fun either, especially if players remain addicted after they're out of the league and then, you know, get into all kinds of trouble that way. And he had some interesting quotes, and I found this discussion on Reddit, and can't even remember. It was actually in a news subreddit, which is how I found it. And he says, if you're an NFL player in particular and you've got a lot of pain, I don't think there's any question that pot is better for your body than Vicodin. And yet athletes everywhere are prescribed Vicodin like it's vitamin C, which is funny because vitamin C is not a prescription medication. But I digress.
Yeah,
you get the idea.
What he's saying is, yes, you know, you get Vicodin and you get Vicodin and you get some Vicodin, too. So I want to bring this to the group as a little bit of a roundtable discussion. How do you feel about the legalization or, you know, the idea of legalizing marijuana as a painkiller in professional sports?
I would simply preface anything I have to say with this. I have never smoked marijuana ever, so I can't speak to its effects mm-hmm. on the body or on anything else. I have taken Vicodin after I had my knee surgery 7 years ago, had an ACL replacement, and that stuff messed me up.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, how? I'm trying to imagine you messed up in any way, Brian.
Well, for the first couple of days, I took it. It did help with the pain in my knee, and it did actually help me sleep for the first day or two. As the week went on, what I found happening is I was just in this perpetual haze.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be fully awake and I couldn't sleep. I was just in this perpetual haze. So after about 3 or 4 days on the stuff, I just stopped taking it and got by with non-prescription ibuprofen and stuff like that.
How did it affect you physically? So like you have that haze, but did it mess with your digestive system or anything like that? Because I remember that being listed as a potential side effect when my daughter had surgery.
I don't remember that. I don't remember a lot about that time when I was on Vicodin.
Fair enough.
I just remember sitting in the recliner and watching TV most of the time in kind of this haze the whole time. And everything I've read about, you know, opioid painkillers, highly addictive, and they often lead to, you know, people going to other more dangerous forms of opioids even than that. Either mm-hmm. they concentrate the painkillers or they end up going to something like heroin to get that fix, which obviously is no good. Contrast that with marijuana, and certainly, you know, I don't think you want to be, you know, smoking marijuana continuously all the time, but everything I've read about marijuana really compares it favorably in terms of addictive qualities and damage to your body compared to, say, alcohol.
Right.
Which is a legal substance.
And I do want to note before the other two guys weigh in is that you don't have to – I would assume most athletes would not want to smoke it at all.
Yeah.
That's not the only way you ingest it, obviously.
Sure.
You can
eat it as
well.
Yeah, there are edibles and things like that.
And the effects are different. Mm-hmm. I think, or not the cumulative effect, but I think your body is going to, especially if you're an athlete, is going to reject smoke.
Sure.
Probably in
yeah,
a way
that
like eating
yeah.
wouldn't. So anyway, what about you guys?
I'm totally fine with it.
I mean, but okay. So here's my question though. You know, like I was just, as Brian was talking about surgery, I was just remembering how my daughter, who was, had just turned, wasn't even 17 at the time, was given a prescription
right.
opioid to handle pain. But, you know, no one in their right mind would want to prescribe a teenager marijuana, even if it was a better painkiller or not as harmful. So I'm wondering too, like, if they were to make it legal or look the other way or whatever, like how would age factor into that? What about the college game where there are, you know, players are younger, but they're still going to be in pain? To your point, Brian, how do you play if you're constantly in a haze? You're not feeling any pain, but then how do you perform, remember plays, all that kind of stuff? So I'm just, what do you think, Travis?
It's an interesting topic, I guess, because first of all, I mean, weed isn't really legal everywhere anyway. So, I mean, the question is
sure.
whether or not we want to use it for sports. I mean, I guess it would become an option if it was ever fully legalized. But also, I think it's worth noting, and kind of the thing that I had mentioned about that haze that you're talking about, Brian, is I might be kind of guessing here, but I think that like most players, professional players, probably baseball, football, basketball, hockey, are always in a haze during the season because they hardly ever get to sleep. They're traveling mm-hmm. three or four times a week, and they must be waking up half the time wondering what city they're in, if they're on a bus, if they're on a plane, if they're in a hotel room. They don't, you know, the travel there is very, very real. And so I think that they already have some kind of haze going on.
Right.
And so this would be specific to taking care of any kind of pains that come along the way, and I guess whatever would work for them would be best. I would prefer it if they could stay away from painkillers as much as possible, but I'd have kind of seen some of that before, what Steve Kerr was talking about with the sort of just give them out to everybody, the Oprah treatment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think the NFL would see it differently than the NBA in terms of – so Steve Kerr here is talking about the NFL. Like these guys are often in a lot of pain and they're getting prescribed Vicodin all the time. Do you think given the conversation that we were having previously, do you think the NBA would see it differently than the NFL and be like, nope, regulations, Vicodin is worse for you and highly addictive, but it's legal and we can get prescriptions, whereas, you know, the evil weed is like this terrible thing and those hippies in the NBA can do whatever they want. But, I mean, do you see that as being a potential
Well, and guys still get suspended and stuff in the NBA.
Of course. I know. I'm talking
for weed
about
and everything.
In the future.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know if there would be that big of a difference, although we just had a discussion about how the NFL is much more, you know, at least I think it's much more conservative than the NBA, and the NBA is much more liberal, and therefore maybe they'd be more likely to support using marijuana as a painkiller. But again, I mean, it's sort of just like putting the cart before the horse a little bit, just because I think you'd have to have like a new federal essentially law that says that marijuana would be legal.
Right, because now you've got some
right.
states that have allowed it.
Right.
But if you're
You'd
not
be good
in
Oregon, but you wouldn't
yeah,
be so great
exactly.
here, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there would have to be something done to kind of make everything uniform to most likely to legalize it everywhere. I think that's the way that things are heading. How mm-hmm. soon that happens, I don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's...
Myers Leonard, by the way, plays in Portland, Oregon. So,
he does.
Just saying. Just
maybe
dot,
maybe
dot,
Myers
dot.
Takes some
yeah.
time.
Maybe we should ask him.
Right. And I guess we should
bring him on.
We should clarify that even if you are in a state where it's legal, the NBA still has policies against it, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Well, I think even if it's legalized, teams could say
it's against our rules.
It's against our rules, and as they could, I guess, with
That's
alcohol
true.
Or even painkillers, even if they're prescribed for an injury. So I don't know. It's kind of a wild topic.
Indeed it is. All right. Good stuff, guys. Thank
right.
you very much. it is rivalry time. And
dun, 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 dun. And it's your turn.
Yeah, it is my turn. And I didn't come up with this until this morning. And honestly, I took kind of the easy way out. It's NFL season. My favorite NFL team since I've been about 6 years old is the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys' biggest rival is anyone?
49ers?
Redskins.
Yes. Mm. Washington Redskins. And that has been a rivalry really since about the early 70s. When basically both teams were pretty good at that time and decided they really didn't like each other. They had a couple games that decided playoff berths. And so that's when the rivalry really took off. It's been pretty strong ever since. There's been some down years for both teams over the years. But you know, this year they were both pretty good, and they played on Thanksgiving Day. Dallas won a good game there. So anyway, it's a fun rivalry. It's been going on really pretty strong for about the last 45 years, give or take. As you know, as someone whose NFL fandom has kind of waned a bit over time, I did still enjoy watching Dallas beat Washington on Thanksgiving Day. That was a lot of fun.
Now, I'm sorry if I missed this. Is that a game that is played every Thanksgiving?
Dallas plays every Thanksgiving.
Yes,
they
I
don't always play Washington.
Okay. So there isn't like one like the same game every year that everybody can look forward to.
No, I would say you know they do play fairly frequently on Thanksgiving every few years. That's the Thanksgiving game. But the NFL kind of rotates different teams in and out of that spot. Detroit always plays. Mm-hmm. They don't always play the same team. Dallas always plays. They don't always play the same team.
So what's the biggest heyday of this rivalry?
I would say actually probably the 70s. There's a game that I just love hearing stories about because it makes Washington just look ridiculously bad. I'll read a little bit from the folks at Wikipedia here briefly. On November 28th, 1974, Washington was 8-3, ready to secure a playoff berth with a win against the Cowboys in a nationally televised game in Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. With less than 10 minutes to go in the third quarter, Washington was leading 16-3. When Cowboys quarterback Roger Staubach was knocked out of the game. Rookie Clint Longley led the Cowboys to a last-minute come-from-behind victory, throwing a 50-yard touchdown pass to Drew Pearson with 28 seconds left. Dallas 24, Washington 23.
Who? Clint Longley?
Clint Longley. And the best part about Clint Longley was he never did anything ever again in the National Football League. The next year he got into a fight in training camp with Roger Staubach and was, like, traded the next day. Never did anything ever again, except he beat Washington on Thanksgiving Day.
Don't punch Roger Staubach. That's the lesson.
That's definitely a lesson. So that's one of the big highlights of that rivalry. Also, one of them that I always remember, I mean, I was a Cowboys fan even of the dark days of the late 80s, early 90s. Right when Jerry Jones bought the team, they were horrible. They had a 1-15 season in 1989. The one win at Washington.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I still was wearing my Cowboys cap proudly on the school bus the next day.
What is it about Dallas that makes them America's team? That I mean,
yeah.
Maybe a much larger question, but it's curious to me because even in those dark days, kind of like some teams in other pro sports, they keep their fans, Cubs, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, I think the 70s was the decade that kind of built Dallas as, quote, America's team. And I don't know if they so much are now. But, you know, I kind of came to fandom at the tail end of their run as, quote, America's team. When Tom Landry was the coach mm-hmm. and Roger Staubach was the quarterback. And, they were good every year. It was a big part of it. Until they kind of fell off in the mid to late 80s. They were just a good team every year. They made 5 Super Bowls during the 1970s, won 2 of them. So they were just a consistently good team. I think that's kind of what built them up into America's team. And I know that fans of every other team absolutely hate that Dallas is called that.
They're the most valuable NFL franchise, aren't they?
I think they are.
Yeah,
I think
which
I heard
is
that.
Really interesting. And also Washington, even though they really haven't been good for a while, on and off, they're still like way up there too.
Yeah, they finally had a decent year last year where they won their division. Washington did, but they've been really uneven. You know, they were really good. They had a good run in the 70s, and then with Joe Gibbs as their coach in the late 80s, early 90s, they were really good. Ever since Daniel Snyder bought that team, they've really kind of fallen off. And actually, some of the same things happened to the Cowboys under Jerry Jones once Jimmy Johnson left. They were both very wealthy franchises. run very well as businesses to make money for their owners. But as far as actual, you know, wins and titles here in the last 20 years, they've been kind of few and far between.
They both franchises have interesting quarterback issues, especially in the last decade.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Dallas has had the saga of Tony Romo, which you know, he's such kind of, and I find it interesting that he's such a polarizing figure because by all accounts, he seems like a pretty nice guy.
Yeah.
He's not like a big jerk or anything.
Well, I think that fumble in the playoffs, that one.
Yeah. Fumble against that didn't Seattle. Help.
Yeah, I remember that very well.
And, you know, the interceptions. He's the classic gunslinger, right?
Yeah, he's kind of Favre-like. Mm-hmm. Although I think he's kind of gotten a bad rap on some of that where he maybe shouldn't have. I mean, his numbers in the fourth quarter stuff are actually pretty good overall, but there's just been some very prominent miscues over the years.
And then he dated, like, Jessica Simpson or somebody, and that just kind of adds to it, honestly.
Yeah. And he was, like, extra jerky in that one of those ESPN commercials that I'm so fond of.
Yeah,
you know, the one I'm talking about where...
Yeah, where the anchors comes in and wants to hang
out
and party with them.
Like, okay.
I'm just going to go home and watch some TV.
Yep.
All right, Scott.
See ya.
Sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. He went to Eastern, right?
He did.
Did he play for Eastern, too? Yeah, okay. Somehow I missed that.
Under legendary head coach Bob Spoo.
He wasn't like a first round draft.
I think he was undrafted free agent.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was good at Eastern, but he wasn't considered a high NFL prospect. And then with the Redskins, you have RG3.
His 1 year of wonder. The RG3 versus Cousins issue is almost like a Romo Dak Prescott light from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And then, of course, Kirk Cousins came out on top of that, and he's actually been pretty good the last few years for them, got them to the playoffs a year ago.
Is Romo over with this new guy? Like,
Romo's
being so dominant?
Romo's perpetually injured now.
Yeah,
and
I know.
So I don't know what Dallas is going to do down the road. For the rest of this year, the rookie Dak Prescott is going to be their quarterback, and Romo will be the backup. And, I think Romo would be fine in that role. I mean, I could think of a lot worse guys to come in.
I was going to say you could do worse
off the bench than Romo if you need him.
Don't you think he wants to start though?
Well, he probably does, and I would think in the off season it's pretty likely that he'll get traded.
The Jets.
Man, that would be something to
it's
see.
It's going to be interesting to see if the Jets get Cutler or Romo.
Or I could see Denver maybe trying to pick up Romo, maybe make one last final run like Peyton Manning did for the Broncos.
Yeah.
They're going to be known for that, like a final stop
before retirement.
before career ending injuries like force you to retire.
Or if you want to go way back, like Joe Namath to the Rams or Johnny Unitas to the San Diego Chargers.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
That might be worth further study.
There's a long history of broken down quarterbacks trying to hang on for one more.
And Joe Montana did well.
Chiefs.
He did.
Yeah, with
Chiefs.
Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never quite got back to a Super Bowl with them, but he had a couple good years with Kansas City. So anyway, that's Dallas and Washington. That's this week's rivalry.
Well, thank you, Brian.
You're welcome. Well, it's time for the status update. John, you've been pretty quiet.
Yeah.
So
I think I never have done the drugs we were talking about earlier, but I feel like I'm in that haze for some reason today. I'm not sure why.
It's pledge. It's pledge.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah. Totally.
I haven't been sleeping well. You know, this is somewhat relevant. I was reading an article on the internet the other day about the White House visit of the Chicago Cubs, and Barack Obama, famously a White Sox fan, invited them to try and make it before he left office. That scheduling that is very, very difficult considering the Cubs have separated and sporadic all across the North America and South America. They have a lot of Latin players who are back home and probably enjoying a little bit of the limelight in their home countries. So scheduling that has been a big problem, and there's also talk that Trump actually appointed Todd Ricketts, who is one of the owners of the Cubs, to his administration. So there's talk that the Cubs might actually prefer – the front office might actually prefer to go because of Todd Ricketts being in Trump administration. So anyway, I think that's sort of an interesting little thing going on there. Obama is a Cubs fan, but he's a Chicago president. His wife, Michelle Obama, is actually a big Cubs fan. So there's a lot of reason to try and make it happen before he leaves office. But there's obviously some reason to maybe wait. The claim is they're not They're not trying to make it political. They would like to visit Obama because he invited them and he's a Chicago president, but it might not happen. Normally they would do this when they play the Nationals sometime during the summers when, you know, the team is scheduled to play the Washington team is when they meet with the president. So it'd be interesting to see that happen, but I thought that was kind of interesting, especially based on what we were talking about earlier, how you can sort of read politics into it. But I think this time it's more actually just about you have a Chicago president and want the Chicago team to visit him before it goes out of office, but it probably won't happen.
All right. Very interesting. All right, Lisa, what you got?
Me? Oh, sure. So I actually in the Bandwagon podcast Twitter, at Bandwagon, no vowels, tweeted out a story that PRI's The World, which is a public media program, about this sport. I'm going to probably say it wrong. Kabaddi? Does that sound right?
Sure. I don't know what it is, but it sounds good.
Because they had they did a story about it, and they posted a GIF that looks amazing. So I thought I would investigate a little further. And the writer of the piece writes this. You don't know kabaddi? It's kind of a cross between wrestling, rugby, and tag. And this GIF, I will post, I'll post a video. It is kind of incredible. So you try to raid, air quotes, your opponent's court and tag members of the other team while chanting the word kabaddi over and over, all in one breath. In competition, it's played on a mat, but kids often play it in the street because the only equipment you need is a sharp-edged stone or brick to draw court lines in the sand. Okay, so this is in India. So the writer goes on to say, we've been playing kabaddi in India for two millennia. Lately, though, it's become really popular. In 2014, the Pro Kabaddi League was formed with eight teams. Now we've begun inviting other countries to the kabaddi mat, including the United States, which sent a team to the Kabaddi World Cup Championship in India in October. So I'm just fascinated by this sport. I'm going to investigate further to find out if women are allowed to play or if they do play. And, you know, we'll have a link to what it looks like into this article. But I loved that's a sport, and just the looks of it, I would never have imagined being invented, and it's been played for 2,000 years. So
kabaddi.
It's K-A-B-A-D-D-I, if kabaddi. Somebody wants to look it up.
Yep. Good.
So anyway, that's me.
Cool. Travis, you have anything this week? We're just kind of springing this on you.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up and that you went ahead of me, because kabaddi was discussed heavily on the podcast – the Slate podcast, Hang Up and Listen, which
A
sports podcast done by the people at Slate. And they interviewed a guy named Kevin Hussle, who is – he was originally in like a music producer like, I don't know, a couple of years ago or something. And then somehow – I don't remember the story, so you ought to go back and listen to it. But he got hooked up with the official – United States kabaddi team, which he basically helped formulate despite not knowing anything about the sport. Like, the sport has absolutely no traction in America, but he took these 20 or 30 Americans over to, it may have been India, it may have been like China or somewhere, and they played in a huge international competition of kabaddi, and then they obviously got their butts kicked, but they, you know, they're essentially establishing a new sport. So that's super interesting. You brought that up.
I'm so curious. It doesn't look like anybody's wearing helmets or any sort of protective padding. I wonder about, like, what kinds of injuries does one sustain? It looks like anything is possible in this sport. So, yeah, well, we'll post a link to that. Isn't that Mike Pesca? Doesn't he
yeah,
do?
Yeah, Pesca is one of the hosts there.
Yeah, he's tweeted at us a couple times, which is kind of cool. So
we, I think we should call him a friend of the bandwagon.
Yeah, we're going to – yeah, I totally would call him that. Anyway.
I don't even know if he's a friend of the bandwagon.
Yeah, but we're going to – he is now, exactly.
Right. Very good. All right, thanks, guys. And for me, this just came out this morning. It's been clamored about for a while in the baseball blogosphere. But this morning, Tuesday morning, the Baseball Writers Association of America voted to make all Hall of Fame ballots public, beginning with next year's vote for the 2018 induction class. Baseball Writers Association of America is, you know, who selects the Hall of Fame. And there's been some complaints over, you know, especially over the last, you know, 10, 15 years as more and more information becomes available on the internet, that, you know, we should know how these guys vote. There are a lot of people who are members of the Baseball Writers Association who don't directly cover baseball. There's guys who maybe covered it for a few years, 10, 15 years ago, You know, there's kind of national sports writers, columnists who, you know, will occasionally write about baseball, but they don't cover it on a daily basis. And I think it's just something that's good for this group to do, just to, you know, make their votes public. If you're willing to make that vote, you should be willing to stand behind it. And that's what they're doing with this.
It's about time.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, so good stuff. So
and blankety blank that guy who didn't vote for Chris Bryant for MVP.
Yeah. Heck with him.
That has nothing to do with the Hall of Fame. But
no, it doesn't. But the same group votes for on those awards.
Exactly.
Too.
So blankety blank that
guy. There was just one guy?
Yeah, and he said on Twitter, "I'm the guy who didn't vote for him, so what?" But I think the night before he had tweeted out, "I'm hearing that Chris Bryant won't be an MVP."
Yeah, won't be unanimous.
Yeah. I wonder what.
Yeah. Gee, how'd that happen, dude?
This is too hot of a take, Lisa.
Cool breaking news.
Yeah, well, I'm like, if you could see me, I have question marks whizzing over my head. So whatever.
We can further dissect.
Yeah, you can clue me in.
Yeah, we will. All right, very good. So I think that's going to wrap things up. And now, Lisa, take us out.
Here we go. Thank you so much for joining us on the bandwagon. Super thanks to Travis.
Thanks, Travis.
T-Dog.
Wow. Thank you.
Tate for being here this week and really going above and beyond because we asked you for a status update.
Incredible.
And to talk about weed in sports. So good work.
Put your weed in there.
Put your weed in it. Today's Bandwagon podcast was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Braltz, and John Steinbacher. There are other people who have helped make Bandwagon a thing despite the odds. Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, Taylor Judd. And sure, we'll go ahead and give the band REM some credit since they're our theme music. You can find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where we link to almost everything we discuss here because sometimes I forget. Videos, audio, social media accounts, etc. You can also subscribe to this podcast and rate it in iTunes. If you rate it, that does help other folks find us, and you want to help out other folks whenever you can, obviously. And it's not just iTunes either. You can also find us pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast. No vowels. We know you know. To get our most recent thoughts on stuff, I have here stuff.
Things.
Just things, stuff and things. We all have our own Twitter accounts, and Travis does too. We'll make sure we mention that. And follow each of us as is your want. We love questions, links, recommendations, etc. We will be back in a couple of weeks just in time for the holidays, so hang in there. Until then, thank you so much for listening.